Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Todd Chipman to the podcast. Dr. Chipman serves as assistant professor of biblical studies here at Midwestern Seminary. He has been the teaching pastor at the Masters Community Church in Kansas City, Kansas, since 2000, is the author of Scripture Storyline, a Biblical Theology Commentary. Dr. Chipman, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to be in the studio with you today, and I'll call you Todd periodically here because I know you that way. You're a part of the community here. I was able to hood you a few years ago as our first PhD graduate, and as I mentioned in your bio, you've been in the Kansas City area here now for, I guess, close to 20 years. So before we get into the topic of the podcast today, which is the pastor and orphan care, and we're going to build the conversation out from your recent book with Moody Press, Moody Publishers, Until Every Child is Home, Why the Church Can and Must Care for Orphans. Before we get into that, I just would love to catch up a little bit for our listeners, let them get to know you, hear your touch of your heart for the local church and for teaching here at Midwestern, and a bit of your story. So tell us about Dr. Todd Chipman.
It is a joy each day to wake up and be me. I tell people sometimes I have the ultimate gig. I get to teach students at a growing and thriving seminary and a great supportive culture. I have a church that loves me and I love them, and we've been together for almost 19 years now, and a family that's growing. Now, I don't want to give too rosy of a picture. There are ups and downs in everyone's lives, but I really have a sort of a life of synthesis. One activity leads to another, and each thrives on the other activities. So I run out of the day often before I run out of delight in what I do.
Listen, I can resonate with that self-assessment. And I tell people often, you know, I have a full life with five children and all the Lord has given me here at Midwestern Seminary. So pray for me often, but never feel sorry for me.
Yes, that's
God
it.
Has been really good. So remind me and our listeners, when did you come to Kansas City and Midwestern Seminary for your very first class?
It is 20 years ago.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. So that was, I guess, the very tail end of the Dr. Mark Coppinger administration?
Yes. Knew Dr. Coppinger a bit when we came to campus and enjoyed the fellowship with him in those early days.
And then that was to do the MDiv degree, and then you completed that degree, pastoring in the area. And then when did you enter the PhD program?
I entered in 2009, so the second year of the program. The first year was just Old Testament in 2008, and then 2009, it was the first class of students. There were six of us.
Yeah, and some great guys in that cohort.
Yes. And those early days of the PhD program were a delight to be a part of. We were trained well. The standards were high, which is something to note. Many PhD programs, if they're just starting out, they would think, well, we're going to have low standards. That was not the perspective of any of the leaders at that time, and I'm happy for that.
Very good. So here you are. You're teaching, you're preaching, you're serving. Tell us a word about your church and a word about your family, and then we'll get into the meat of the conversation today.
My wife and I have been married for 25 years and seven children, one son, six girls. So I tell folks I live in a sorority. I know all the smells of different perfumes and activities of life, but they're a joy, and I just have a great time shepherding my daughters along. Church, a moderate-sized church, about 125 people or so, strong across the board, small group ministry that thrives, missions, so many good things about our church and the quality of it and the increasing quantity, part of the local Baptist Association here on the Kansas side, Kansas City, Kansas Baptist Association, and just a delightful ministry. I look forward to every Sunday, even after almost 20 years.
Tremendous. Now, let's talk about orphan care in particular, and that's a broader topic than people often realize, but one significant aspect of it, and to be a bit more specific in my question to you, is adoption itself.
Yes.
And you've experienced this personally, so tell your personal story, and then that'll lead us to a segue into the book.
Yes, I have sort of the full spectrum here of adoption. I'm adopted. There's not much I know about my biological parents. All of that is on a two-page letter from Nebraska Children's Home, where I was adopted from. My parents met My biological parents met one time, from what I know of. And after my biological mother found out she was expecting, she was actually kicked out of her home. It's a sad story. But in the Lord's providence, he allowed her to room with a physician in Omaha while she was pregnant until I was born. And at that time, that's all I know. I was adopted about a month later. And my parents, some of my earliest memories, my parents sitting down with my older sister and I, were not biological siblings, but siblings in our family. She was also adopted. And they were just informing us of what adoption is and that they couldn't have children at a hospital in the natural way. But they chose us. They wanted us, and we were their kids. And for some kids, and Dr. Young, our listeners here, have perhaps know of folks who have adopted or have heard stories of that kind of a conversation really going south quickly. It can cause emotional trauma. For me, it didn't. Just in God's grace, I didn't even think about it unless someone brought it up, and then I would make a comment. But otherwise, not a problem, and just went through life. When I met my wife, Julie, and we were dating, in that first few months of dating, you're always finding out about your person you're dating and sharing information, shared that I was adopted. She had a sphere of relationships in which she knew of folks who had done foster care, who had adopted, some of them believers, and thought that that was a neat idea. And we thought, you know, in those romantic days, well, maybe someday we'll adopt. Well, 5 years into our marriage, we have 3.8 kids. 7 years into our marriage, we have five. We're not thinking about expanding our home. But when our oldest went away to college, we had an open room, and the Lord just organized in his providence for us to get an email from Focus on the Family that same month that our oldest went away to college. We had an open bedroom, and their Wait No More ministry, where they profile children whose parental rights have been severed. They're truly orphans, but they're in the foster care system right here in the United States. And we got some information, and the Lord just opened our hearts to those kinds of kids. And the rest is history and in a book.
That's so special, so sweet to hear. You know, when I was a kid, would only occasionally encounter someone adopted. Mm-hmm. And when you're a 10-year-old kid and you find out a classmate's adopted, for me, it was like, man, that's pretty wild. Like, what does that mean? What is that like? But it was still a distant phenomenon to me. Karen and I, when we got married, we were married in June of 1999, just celebrated 20 years, and the Lord gave us our first child in October of 2001, the year or so before, a couple of years before she was expecting. People would ask us about children and that sort of thing. We'd talk, and I remember saying something like this, and looking back, it looked so young and so foolish and so irresponsible. But saying something like this, yeah, you know, we may have a child or two, and but you know, if we don't have children, we probably wouldn't adopt. Like, we don't feel that passionate about having children. Mm. You know, a lot of errant thinking there, a lot of thinking I have long since renounced. But first of all, five children now. God has been good, and each child brings us so much joy and hope and sense of just fruitfulness in the Lord. And I thought back then that, like, if you have a child and you love that child, a parent has X amount of love to give. A second child means that, okay, that X amount of love has to be divided in half. And a third child, then that X amount of love is divided into thirds. But of course, what I found very quickly is, no, that each child brings its own fountain of love. Mm-hmm. And there's not a division of love, there's a multiplication of love. Mm-hmm. But back to that comment. So I viewed 20 years ago adoption as kind of like a consolation prize for people who couldn't have children. Mm-hmm. But wanted children, and if you wanted a child but couldn't have a child, then you would go to adopt, and that was kind of your parental consolation prize. And again, I have long since renounced that way of thinking. First of all, that's a very consumeristic approach to it. You know, I want children. I can't get children. I will go get a child as a consolation prize to meet a desire I have, without ever thinking of it through the lens of the child itself, who needs a parent, who wants parents. Mm-hmm. The Lord hasn't moved us yet personally to pursue orphan care or foster care or adoption, but all of that is a value system has been upended and reframed and rightly framed for me. Mm. And even I'm hoping this conversation today helps to kind of do that for our listeners. Mm. Some who view it perhaps as odd, others who view it as like a consolation prize. Others, you view it as kind of meeting a desire for a parent, but never thinking of it from the side of the children that have this desire, have this need. And so this is clearly on your heart, and you've lived it as a child. Mm. You're living as a parent now. And so much on your heart, you've written a book, Until Every Child Is Home. What is the main takeaway from this book that you want listeners to get?
My book here is not one of those just sappy, reflective books about foster kids or orphans, and we need to help them. It's not a book that is, we're just going to go save the world. It's actually a strategic ministry kind of book. It is based upon my experience adopting my children more than being adopted, and it's based upon my experience as a pastor. It's based upon my experience as a seminary professor and someone who teaches New Testament. And it's an argument. It's an argument that takes the commonly thought of idea that if we would, as a church, work to engage orphans or do foster care, that kind of a ministry, it would suck the life out of our church. There's no end to it. These kids could have trauma in our church. Boy, they could cause all sorts of problems. We don't want to bring them in. Actually, I argue against that no, this is actually a gateway ministry. And any leader who is thinking about his or her organization thinks, what can I do that would initiate an activity that would stimulate other kinds of ministry? Well, I would want to pull those strings. If I can stimulate ministry, that's what I want to do. That's my job as a leader. And I have found that orphan care actually does that. It helps the church to know God better. And I have three chapters in the book on theological development. It helps the church to do relational ministry and discipleship, mentoring in the nearest spheres across generations. And I have three chapters on how orphan care can help a church's giftings and relational giftings to come to the surface. It can help a church engage the racial tensions in our culture. So often, the demographics of foster care and kids who need adoption are of a different race. And so I have three chapters on that. This ministry can inhibit the human trafficking pipeline that is the foster care system in the United States. And so I have three chapters there. The final section of the book, each of these sections, three chapters, the final section is more for pastors. And I have three chapters on how this kind of ministry, by a pastor engaging it, can provide an example of leadership that is just unique. When I took our girls into our home, our adopted girls. I had been at our church 15 years, preaching through lots of books, completed a PhD, served on the local association executive board, various outlets for leadership. But when I brought those kids into our home, I had everyone's attention all the more. There was one gentleman in our church, who for some reason was talking about his pastor adopting kids when he was at the doctor. So he's just at the doctor and somehow this conversation comes up and the physician told him, well, at least your pastor, your pastor believes what he says. Mm. Because I was exemplifying it to someone who's not a Christian, just this physician who a member of my church was visiting. And I think that's true, though that's not a litmus test for pastors believing what they say, certainly, but it is one outlet for it.
So you mentioned the different parts of the book and the book at the end of it, Orphan Care and Church Leadership. And for the conversation today, we're talking primarily to pastors, to ministers, to church leaders, to seminary students. And so I want to continue to try to tailor the conversation towards them. Your final book, part seven, your final part in the book, part seven, Leading from the Front, chapter 19, chapter 20, If They Can Do It, Goodness, We Can Sure Do It, and then Be the One? I want to take that be the one question mark and try to draw some lines from that question to the average person listening to this podcast, the seminary student, the college pastor, the senior pastor, and talk about is what types of questions they need to be asking in two categories. One is they would personally reflect on and contemplate adoption for themselves. And then as a follow-up question, I'll get to in a moment, but I'll go ahead and put it out there. Why and if they should be more on the front line as it relates to leading their congregation to be more intentional about this.
Yes, these titles of the chapters 19, 20, 21 in part 7 are actually phrases spoken by various folks whom I profile in the book. So each chapter of the book, I interviewed someone, and many of these folks are well known to this podcast. The chapter 21, Be the One, is an interview with Paul Chitwood, president of the International Mission Board. And this was a phrase that his wife actually spoke to him when they were in Kentucky and he was leading the Kentucky Baptist Association. And they had a ministry on foster care and adoption. And they were promoting this. And his wife said, I think we need to be the one in our church. And so they began this process. The other chapters here are profiles from Kevin Azell, who's just on our campus here, and then Jeff Dodge, who's one of our instructional faculty mm-hmm. on at MBTS. So this last part has connections all over here with our seminary and with the SBC, and it's a delight to think about that. So when someone is considering this as a pastor, there are a number of avenues that they could take up to engage. They could promote this and publicize events, conferences, opportunities, profiling children around the world and in the United States in the foster care system or in orphanages and making that more and more public. There's an Orphan Sunday program that the Christian Alliance for Orphans has begun. It's the second Sunday of November each year, and taking time to highlight that and spotlight that, all the way to directly being involved and praying about if God would have them to maybe foster for a season or think about expanding their family. That whole spectrum can be helpful.
So I want to spend our remaining minutes here thinking about the practicalities of a church getting more intentionally behind orphan care and adoption, and what that means for the pastor who would, like any other local church initiative, really, really lead this. Practically, what are some of the challenges to keep in mind?
Some of those challenges include that it may get messy. If you begin to try to do this, it may get messy in terms of your leadership because it's easy for folks to feel like, well, this now is a litmus test ministry. If a pastor is promoting something, it's often that the congregation thinks, well, this is now all we're doing. And orphan care is so emotional, Dr. Allen, that sometimes if someone is passionate about it, they can overstate their case and even undercut their ministry success. And I like to tell folks, foster care, adoption, these are ministries that fit within a healthy local church. They are not a litmus test for it. They encourage other kinds of ministries, the Great Commission, gifts rising to the surface, cultural engagement. But thinking about how that messaging is done and thinking through that with other leaders and being strategic about it, but then continuing over the long haul thinking about this. This could help us in ministry in lots of ways over the long haul. Let's not overdo it, but let's equip our people. And then God often will raise up one or two families where it is the case that they can't have children biologically. And so this, as you mentioned earlier, this isn't a second-tier parenting. It's a first-tier parenting. Mm. And we're going to celebrate this with them, and we're going to come alongside of them. And when a pastor recognizes that need in the church and begins to shepherd it, that pastor will see the whole church rise up. They will see if a pastor helps to organize, let's get a baby shower ready for when this couple gets their first child, they will see the whole church rise up. And then just momentum comes, and it really is fun to see how that can progress a church ministry.
So we can make the case scripturally, practically, experientially of the benefit, the need, the rightness of caring for these little ones. Let me tease out an analogy here, maybe for our last question or two with you, Todd, and get your thoughts on this. So there are a lot of things I care about. Some things I care about with, you know, ultra passion. Some things I care about passionately. Some things I kind of sort of care about. Some things, oh, maybe I care about. Some things I don't care about. Some things I decidedly do not care about, right?
Yes.
But I care about things with a lot of passion, things like being a pro-life, not only in my voting, but as an advocate. I care about, you know, defending marriage and representing that as a man and woman in Christ together in a union. I care about different things like that. I care about adoption kind of in that category. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean this. I'll occasionally get you know, a critic at me through social media or letter in the mail, like, you aren't pro-life because you didn't join us in boycotting that Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're not committed to marriage as you should be because you didn't march on Jefferson City with us. Well, the reality is I wasn't opposed to that. Maybe I would have done that if the time permitted. I was there, what have you. But it's the sense of that where people oftentimes will want, like, their big thing, their most mm-hmm. passionate priority
mm-hmm.
to be your most passionate priority. And if your thing doesn't become their thing, or mm-hmm. perhaps better put, if their thing doesn't become your thing, mm-hmm. then well, you're not, like, legitimately with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of people listening here, and I'm hoping that what we're saying is resonating with everyone. And there's a whole lot of people that are passionate about this, mm-hmm. kind of like at least where I am, where this is up there with marriage and the pro-life issue and how we speak. But I got to be candid and say this hasn't been for me yet in my heart, like, the most ultimate thing mm-hmm. in that I haven't adopted three kids.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I want the future. Doesn't mean that God may not open our hearts to that or mm-hmm. open a door. Or frankly, as I know many of my friends have, God just dropped a baby in their lap. And it wasn't something they spent 5 years planning. It was just a need that happened on a rainy Saturday, and they stepped in by faith. And voila, 10 years later, they got this kid they've been raising for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But for those listening, I'm praying and hoping that there are some listening that God's stirring for like this to be their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there's people listening that they really need to be a Todd Shipman or a Russell Moore or a Tony Marita mm-hmm. or a Kevin Ezell, that like this really is their thing. Mm-hmm. It's not just one of several important concerns, but it is the major concern, and so much so they're personally adopting, so mm-hmm. much so they're really intentionally channeling money towards these ministries. They're really intentionally channeling and crafting their public ministry towards these. So here's the final question, saying all that to pull this mm-hmm. together. How do our listeners know if this is their thing?
Yes, and I think it is their thing if, just as if someone else, it's their thing. God's call works in a confirmation of desire over time through objective factors. So God's call on someone's life to do this is birthed by desire often, and sometimes that desire feels like need because I want to be a parent. And if I can't have children, I need that. I just feel that need to be complete. And it's God's work in a couple's life. They want a parent. That's a natural desire. And this may be God's way of doing it. So continue to pray and let that desire brew. And then begin to look for confirmation outside, talking to your pastor, talking to family, beginning to get resourced, books like my book, Russell Moore's book, Adopted for Life, other resources, lots of blogs. You mentioned Tony Marita has spoken on this extensively, a friend of MBTS. So get information and then begin to go through a process of foster care and getting licensed, looking at the various agencies that are available for adoption, if that is what God has called someone to, taking those steps. But there's a sense in which that desire becomes public, and then it needs to be confirmed in the local church by family, and then walking through. Now, some of our listeners here, get ready to have some interesting looks. If you go tell someone, I feel God would have us to foster or adopt, you're going to have a spectrum of responses, and you have to be ready for that and working it through. But starting with the local church, and that's a lot of what I argue in my book, that the local church has such capacity, and it is a powerful organization. And it is God's work in the world, and we can together make an impact in this sphere and in kids' lives.
Dr. Shipman, thank you for joining me on Preaching and Preachers and for your ministry here at Midwestern Seminary at the Masters Community Church, and in particular, today, through this book, Until Every Child is Home, Why the Church Can and Must Care for Orphans. You can get it through Moody Publishers here at the Sword and Trial Bookstore, Amazon, or I suppose most anywhere books are sold. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. My pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.